So the sense of this verse is important, 28-29, Prabhupada. Madhvakta pratigodhyarto mat prasadena bhuyasa nikshayasam sva samsthanam kaivalyakyam mad ashrayam. Verse 28. My devotee, Madhvakta, actually becomes self-realized by my unlimited causeless mercy. Madhprasadena. That's not our effort alone, it requires mercy. We still make some effort. But by my unlimited mercy, my devotee becomes self-realized, and thus, when free from all doubts, Chinna Sanshaya. It's in the second verse. Thus, free from all doubts, he steadily progresses towards his destined abode, which is directly under the protection of my spiritual energy of unadulterated bliss, Kaivalya Akyam. Unadulterated bliss. That is the ultimate perfectional goal of the living entity. After giving up the present material body, the mystic devotee goes to that transcendental abode and never comes back. In her question, Devahuti was saying, what happens to the living entity? Because the living entity is involved with matter. You take the living entity away from matter. What's matter? Take matter away from living entity. What's a living entity? Those that are not devotees or personalists, it's voidism or impersonalism. That's the destination. So the counter to that is there's a transcendental mud ashram, transcendental destination. Prabhupada's purport, actual self-realization means becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. The existence of a devotee implies the function of devotion and the object of devotion. It's three things. Devotee, the object of devotion, and the exchange of devotion. Self-realization ultimately means to understand the personality of Godhead and the living entities, to know the individual self and the reciprocal exchanges of loving service between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity. It is real self-realization. He just said it three times. This cannot be attained by the impersonalists or other transcendentalists, semicolon. They cannot understand the science of devotional service. Devotional service is revealed to the pure devotee by the unlimited causeless mercy of the Lord. This is especially spoken of here by the Lord, Mat Prasadena, quote, by my special grace. The process of devotional service is his special grace. And the realization that comes through that special grace is his special grace. He reveals himself by his special grace through the medium of the special grace, his internal potency. Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So through the agency of Bhakti Devi, living entities are engaged, that's the medium. So that's the special grace. But prasadena. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. What's the reference from Bhagavad Gita? Bhaktyama abhijanati. And then there's another. Krishna gives the intelligence by which to come to me. Only those who engage in emotional service with love and faith receive the necessary intelligence from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is mat prasadena, necessary intelligence, so that gradually and progressively they can advance to the abode of the Personality of Godhead. Then he goes through the next paragraph, three other terms in the verse. Starts with nikshayasa, shayasa, nikshayasa. Shaya means ultimate benefit. And nikshayasa is the ultimate benefit, ultimate destination. That's given by this special mercy, mat prasadena. Sva samsthana. Samstha, what does samstha mean? Situated. Sva samsthana indicates that the impersonalists have no particular place to stay. The impersonalists sacrifice their individuality so that the living spark can merge into the impersonal effulgence emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord. But the devotee has a specific abode. The planets rest in the sunshine, but the sunshine itself has no particular resting place. When one reaches a particular planet, then he has a resting place. The spiritual sky, which is known as Kaivalya, that's another term in this verse. Kaivalyakyam madashrayam. So, Kaivalya. Just like the term that you use to describe impersonalism, kevala advaita, or kaivalya, absolute advaita monism. There's also kevala bhakti, absolute devotion, nothing else but. So it depends on the school that you're from, how you view that word. Here it can be used either way. That is, the impersonalist goes to the spiritual sky, or he doesn't have any place. Or he can go to the place of the Supreme Lord that's absolute. The spiritual sky, which is known as Kaivalya, is simply blissful light on all sides. And it is under the protection of the Supreme Lord. What's that verse in Bhagavad Gita? 14th chapter, 27. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Familiar? The Brahman, Krishna is the pratishta of Brahman. He's the basis and support of Brahman. The impersonal Brahman effulgence rests on the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, the bodily effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Kaivalya, or impersonal Brahman. In that impersonal effulgence, there are spiritual planets, which are known as Vaikunthas, chief of which is Krishna Loka. Some devotees are elevated to the Vaikuntha planet, and some are elevated to the planet Krishna Loka. According to the desire of the particular devotee, he is offered a particular abode, which is known as Sva Sangsthana. Again, this is by mercy. The pure devotee is given his residence in the spiritual world. Sva Sangsthana. By the grace of the Lord, the self-realized devotee engaged in devotional service understands his destination even while in the material body. You can go back to Godhead before leaving your body by consciousness. Once Prabhupada was speaking in his room, his quarters in Los Angeles. It was a room conversation just after Prabhupada was greeted at the airport, because he had come from overseas travel and arrived in Los Angeles, and then he went to his room. And in his room, because at the airport he was interviewed by a reporter, and his fanfare and like that. Then in his room it was more intimate. And Prabhupada said, "I know that you're all speaking about my activities." It is true. Prabhupada is now in Delhi, but soon he'll go to Calcutta. And then from Calcutta he's going to go to Tokyo, and then he's going to go to Australia, and then he's going to go to Hawaii, and soon he'll come to Los Angeles. And all those places, you're getting reports from the devotees with the Prabhupada doing here, and that place, and that place. He said, "But you should, actually you should know that I'm always with Krishna." Even within the present body, when one knows one's destination. If consciousness is fixed, and when your consciousness is fixed, that's where you go. And then, there's another term mentioned here, lingad vinirgame. These are all, no, the terms in these two verses. Yogi lingad vinirgame. Vinirgame is after departing. After departing the gross and subtle body. The word lingad vinirgame, which are used here, mean, quote, "after being freed from the two kinds of material body, subtle and gross body, subtle body, when one is transferred to the spiritual world, he gives up both. He enters the spiritual sky in his pure spiritual body." Just like we understand Narada, first canto, when he left his body from his previous life, from the previous day of Brahma. It's interesting. The verse says, not as lightning and thunder occur almost simultaneously, lightning and illumination. They're like, there's simultaneous lightning and illumination are simultaneous. As he left his body, the spiritual form left behind the body instantly. He enters the spiritual sky in his pure spiritual body and is stationed in one of the spiritual planets. What's that term? Spiritual planets? Sva Sangsthana. The devotees are given a destination. They're given a spiritual body. They're given devotional service. They're given a place to render devotional service. They're given the object of devotional service. Their natural love for that Supreme is awakened. Given everything. as they desire, they are allowed to merge into spiritual effulgence emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord as the impersonalist. The word samsana is also very significant. As a living entity prepares himself, so he attains his abode. There's this, I was preparing for the seminar, The Role of Faith in the Unfolding of Bhakti, and there's a whole anuchain or section of Bhakti Sandarbha where Jiva Goswami describes a little sharing, because it fits this message very much. There's the Sanskrit term adhikar. What does it mean?
Right?
Or qualification? Adhikar. Qualification. So, in that, those verses from Canto 11, Chapter 7, I'll give you one of them. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. So, Jiva Goswami quotes, there is the adhikar for karma, there's the adhikar for jnana, and there's the adhikar for bhakti. The adhikar for karma is what is attached to matter. The adhikar for jnana is what is detached from material energy. And the qualification for the devotee is he's neither attached nor detached. Indifferent or neutral, like Krishna describes in Chapter 6, sees pebbles, stones, and gold the same, honor, dishonor the same, pleasure, pain the same, happy, sad, detached, but detached in the sense of not overly attached this way, not overly attached. So same as this prior discussion about family life or worldly activity or doing your duties or things like that. That's really easy to get attached. It's really easy to get attached to your favorite dungarees or your shoes or, you know, your hairstyle or, you know, just anything temporary. It's just really easy to get attached. So a qualification for bhakti is one is neither too much attached or too much detached. As in the Gani, because too much detached, where's their shelter? The shelter for the devotee is Krishna. So the person is neither too much attached, too much detached. That's a good qualification. Now then, later comes these other verses, where they are, then the next following verses, that person neither too much attached, too detached, may have the good fortune of association of a devotee. And what's the cause for that? It's causeless. The devotee's merciful. And they may give their mercy here, they may give their mercy there. This is a causeless affair. And in that association of such a devotee, there may awaken some attraction or faith in the hearing process. The association of devotees. You know, Adarshadnatatak-sadhu-sandha-bhajana-kriya. Some faith in the bhajana-kriya activities. And then this other one that I showed you. Even when they still have some affinity, there's the faith is propelling them forward. And they like this discussion about acceptance. I recognize I may have this attraction. I also recognize it's foolish, but I have this attraction. I have this fullest attraction. So let me invest my, rather than lament over this fullest attraction, let me invest my energy in that which I have faith in, the faith in the topics of Krishna and the potency within the topics of Krishna, and that Krishna is being delivered through those, through that sound vibration, the name and the topics of Krishna. And I feel uplifted, I feel purified, I feel benefited. I may again become attractive, but I feel benefited. So let me continue with this. That element of faith carries the devotee to Krishna, because faith connects them to Krishna. And of course, it's continued association with those who have faith. It's like standing near a fire. You'll get warm. Associating with those that have faith, it will strengthen faith. And in fact, one of the topics I'm going to be speaking about is, this is the primary activity that someone who's extending compassion to others or extending Krishna consciousness to others is to nurture their faith. And everyone has a different situation. So there's different kinds of faith. One devotee told me once, I started coming to the regular program of Bhagavad Gita study because I was doing really well in school, and I thought, well, I'm already doing very well in school, but there's this Bhagavad Gita class, and it's pious to go to a Bhagavad Gita class, so that'll help me do well in school. And just add to my punya credit, so I'll go to the Bhagavad Gita class. He said, a whole year passed before I realized it was more than just building pious credits. There's something else going on here in Krishna's message of Bhagavad Gita. But it took a whole year to get it. Like, hey, there's something else here. So that's like elevation of faith. There's some initial faith. And again, this is, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's language, it's not a term that Prabhupada uses, but it's Shraddha Abhas. There's Navabhas, the shadow of the holy name, or reflection of the holy name. And similarly, there's Shraddha Abhas, Shraddha Abhas, a semblance of faith. I'll go to the Bhagavad Gita class because it will increase my pious merit so I can do better in my academic work. The shadow of the world. But then, real faith, just like we read in that purport just this morning. I know it was a long time ago, this morning. But remember that distinction that Prabhupada was making about pure devotion and mixed devotion? Remember that? Shall we read it again? Read it again. Text 27. Anyone engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as a devotee. But there is a distinction between pure devotees and mixed devotees. There's one that I mentioned already. Go to Bhagavad Gita class because it will increase my pious credits. It's pious things. You can do pious things and you prosper and you do well in your worldly aspirations. Your material desires are fulfilled. And you can enjoy it. I'll do pious things. Yeah. Here he takes it even, it's even stronger. A mixed devotee engages in devotional service for the spiritual benefit of being eternally engaged in the transcendental abode of the Lord in full bliss and knowledge. It sounds like what this verse is saying is the topmost perfection. In material existence, when a devotee is not completely purified, he expects material benefit from the Lord in the form of relief from material miseries, or he wants material gain or advancement in knowledge of the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity, or knowledge as to the real nature of the Supreme Lord.
That sounds pretty high. These Prabhupada's calling it mixed. So what's the unmixed? Or what's Shuddha? Shraddha. Pure faith. Pure faith. It's the residents of the spiritual world. They're not looking to understand anything or to go anywhere or have some, you know, get something they don't have. They just want to be engaged in service of the Supreme Lord. And topmost of all, this is in Brihat Bhagavatamrita especially described, that the topmost devotees are the residents of Vrindavan. And amongst the residents of Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, topmost is devotees. Because the intensity of their ardent desire to please Krishna by any means is superlative. Doesn't mean Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj are kind of so-so. They're nice, but they're not really. They're pure. They're Shakti Tattva. They're not even living entities. They're the potent, direct potency of the Supreme Lord. But the intensity, the selflessness of the residents of Vrindavan, particularly the gopis, is so strong. So, if we can somehow capture that, we're very far from that position. But if we can capture, that is wonderful. Superlatively wonderful. And when we're dealing with our worldly attractions and dealing with our worldly duties and the complexities of life, and somewhere in the process of our devotional practice, there's this faith that Krishna Loka is the highest destination. And that's where we belong. And what kind of wonderful love do we, just like the gopi said about, no, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, it's Shukadeva Goswami says about the counter boys, Prabhupada quoted this often. Who can imagine how many pious activities have these counter boys performed? So that every day, almost like 10 hours a day, 10 hours every day, they're with Krishna all day long. Just frolicking in blissful enjoyment with Krishna. How many pious activities? The Krishna's food. How many pious activities has this living entity undergone that now he's tasting the lips of Lord Krishna? Unfortunately. But it's not just by pious activities, but it's by the, as we heard in previous verses in this chapter, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime engaged in regular hearing and chanting and elevation of consciousness and fixing consciousness upon the Supreme. Lifetimes of that. Or have practiced eligibility. That's the adhikara, and then there's the result. That's something that Jiva Goswami speaks about. The result? This isn't the same Bhakti Sandarbha Amuchet. The results of devotional service arise from one's determination. Your sankalpa, your intention, what you're hankering for. It's true about material affairs, but it's also true about spiritual affairs. Material affairs, you need certain piety to get, whatever it is, $1 million or the house or the something or the something. Piety has to accompany. But bhakti is so strong, nothing else is needed. Just connect with bhakti, and whatever your sankalpa is, and so that's what's being said. Is sva prasadena, your destination determined by the result is determined by your determination. I'm attracted to this love of the residents of Vrindavan. I don't fully understand it, but it's very attractive. And our great acharyas, they're extolling the virtue of the love of the residents of Vrindavan again and again and again. So I'm attracted. So hearing those messages from those qualified persons awakens that attraction within us, and that becomes one's anchoring or one's determination. Yeah. And then the result. So sthanina. Sanstana. Okay, so the last verse of the chapter. When a perfect yogi's attention yada na, when the yogi's perfect attention is no longer attracted to the byproducts of mystic powers. Remember, this is Satyuga. The process is meditation, and meditation, meditators often wish to experience mystic powers. I was visiting the home of a very elderly Chinese professor in Beijing, and he's so well respected that he's now elderly, he's retired, but he's a consultant that the government turns to when they want to do something in relation to culture, spirituality. He was describing that the Chinese government wants to promote, guess what, China. And so they consult him how to do that. So he was describing they're investing this mega amount of wealth in something that's way over the western part of China, up in the mountains, and it's going to showcase ancient Chinese culture. So they're consulting with him what elements should go there and how they should they present it. So he's like, oh, he's a very well-respected man. So he was going into this thing, not so much bragging, just like sharing. And in the course of the discussion, it became very evident that he had a very deep appreciation for mysticism. And the way that he was expressing it is, there are some persons who have these special abilities, and they can experience things that the rest of us can't experience. And he had this sankalpa. He had this hankering to have mystical experience. So I told him, I want to invite you to the installation when the deities in Mayapur move from where they were, or where they are today, to the new temple. I want to invite you, because that would be a spiritual experience in your lifetime. He's very elderly. I said, I hope you live that long. Because I shared with him, in my experience, there are two most powerful events, like spiritually breathtaking events, and one was the installation of Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan. It was, you know, the spiritual, the curtain of the spiritual world opened, and there we were, the spiritual world. It was waves and waves of ecstasy, waves of ecstasy from that event. Each time Prabhupada was making the offering to Krishna Balaram, and he turned to offer each article to the audience in the assembly, his smile just got bigger and bigger, and he was glowing. I don't know how to describe it other than just waves of ecstasy. The same thing happened with the Panchatattva installation. It's not so long ago. Not just that it was a 3-day event, it was an experience. But I walked in because I was attending GBC meetings and he was just able to attend the final day. When I walked in, the atmosphere was so thick you could cut it with a knife. It was just like the same thing, way back to say it. This devotee that I know, not so well, but you know, he turned to me and said, "This isn't just a DV installation. That a bunch of Tantra assembly." It was amazing. So I told this Chinese professor, I want you want a mystical experience? I want to invite you. You'll become, it doesn't matter, his heart is already open for that, so it'll happen. But pure devotion isn't a mystical experience. Pure devotion is simply wishing to please Krishna. Like this example in Nectar Devotion of Dharuka. There's Dharuka in Hastinapur, Krishna's chariot driver. But there's also another Dharuka in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. And his relationship with Krishna is Dasya. It's not Sakya. He's a cowherd boy, but his relationship is predominantly Dasya, mixed with Sakya. So when he's fanning Krishna, ecstasy is overcoming him. He's checking the ecstasy because it's interfering with his fanning of Krishna. So the last verse, when the perfect yogi's attention is no longer attracted by the byproducts of mystic powers, which are manifestations of the external energy. The mystic powers of the yogis, not the mystic power of Krishna's name, his presence felt. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did with Prakashananda Sarasvati, flashing his Brahmajyoti before those that were very interested in the Brahmajyoti, or Krishna showing his universal form, or Arjuna, or partial universal form in the assembly in Hastinapur. But mystic yogis, they want these different powers and play with them like a child with toys. They're like very sophisticated toys, but they play with them. His progress towards me becomes unlimited when it goes beyond that. And thus, the power of death cannot overcome me. That doesn't mean the body lives forever. It means the pangs and the misery and the fear of death can't touch such a person. They see where their destination is, like Narada when he left his body for his previous life and attained the spiritual form. That's the end of the chapter. Bhakti Mukti Siddhi. So Lord Chaitanya's teachings summarize. The Bhagavatam, his teachings are the teachings of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam teachings are the teachings of Vaishnava. They're inseparable. So, Kapila Deva's teaching, even as Satyuga, and there's the process of meditation, and the process of meditation does come power, and even mystic power. Mayasu Siddhasya Vishadite Mila. These mystic perfections are manifestations of Maya, and the yogi is interested. They may be there. They may not be there. Not hankering for some mystic perfection or lamenting because he's not getting it.
Prabhupada gives this nice example. I think I mentioned it the other day. The queen, as she moves about the palace, the king has made arrangement for what the British term is ladies-in-waiting. I don't know what the term is here in India. Prabhupada speaks ladies-in-waiting, attendants to the queen. And as the queen is moving about the palace, the attendants are following her here and there. She isn't interested in the attendants. She's interested in the king. So when a devotee is so qualified, those powers may come to the devotee, but they're not interested in them. And they purposely don't exhibit them. Prabhupada taught like this. Purposely devotees don't exhibit them, because worldly people will then become attracted to mystic power and covet mystic power, not the pure devotion to Krishna. But whatever they do, although they're gifted with those mystic powers, they have their attendants or ladies in waiting, or their powers, their gifts. There's one little story, I'll end with this. The deities in London, before there was the Bhaktivedanta Manor, there was, before there was Soho Street, there was another location that the devotees had rented. I forget the location. Not a nice location, but a little tiny place. And they were trying to establish an altar for the deities. The deities had been donated, long story, to some Indian family in London, were just keeping them like furniture, you know. And they knew that wasn't right. And anyway, so they gifted them to Prabhupada, and the devotees brought them to a burying place, seven burying places, that was the address. So they were establishing an altar. And they were making an altar that was tall, and it was made of marble with four columns. And as they were making the arrangements to place the deities, Radha, London, Ishwara, on the altar, one of the columns started to tilt. So that the devotees that were with Prabhupada were these tall, young, you know, Herculean American youth. And they were trying to hold up the you know, there's a canopy that was also made of marble. And it was too heavy. So Prabhupada jumped in and held it up himself. And instructed them what to do so they, you know, the deities would be safe. And then he stepped back. And they were amazed. Like, where did Prabhupada get this power? And his stature was short. But somehow, in service to Krishna, some power beyond ordinary power. Tell another Prabhupada story. I'll end with another Prabhupada story. I didn't have much association with Prabhupada personally, other than, you know, we had festivals in Vrindavan and Mayapur, and then when he came to visit him before, other than that, these stories were stories from other people. One time Prabhupada was seated in his room in Los Angeles, and they were opening his mail, he was having him open letters. He was getting an invitation to go here and go there and go to this other place. And Prabhupada was having fun talking with them, you know, saying, should I go to this place? Should I go to that place? Like, you know, just spinning a dial, like, where on the earth plan do you want to go? And he got a letter from Mexico City. And there was some devotee from Los Angeles who had gone to Mexico City to make some arrangement for Prabhupada to be honored at a big festival they had in Mexico City. So Prabhupada sat up and said, arrange for my visa at once.
Just like that, just like he loved invention. This is one of the Prabhupada's personal secretaries that was describing. So they, you know, right away wanted to make his arrangements for his Lisa. And when they got to the location, first, there are three parts to the story. One part is they went to examine where the place was that the Prabhupada festival was going to be held, a big public festival. And it turns out that it was a place where they had bullfights.